A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 71. What if your mother tried to cut her heart out?
Growing up Jehovah's Witness, it's like an all-encompassing thing. Like if you are somebody who is committed to the religion, then it's almost like a full-time job in addition to anything else that you're doing. My dad has been a Jehovah's Witness, I want to say, since he was around 5 or 6, and my mom was raised Jehovah's Witness. So for the most part, Jehovah's Witnesses only really hang around and associate with other Jehovah's Witnesses. All of my friends, the few that I had, I just saw at church, and church kind of dominates your life. You went a minimum of 3 days a week, and then on the weekends was when you would go to knock on people's doors and ask them if they wanted to hear about the good news of the kingdom. My dad, he's from England, so he's got this awesome accent, and people just, for the most part, people were just more so enamored by this, you know, eloquent, well-mannered gentleman, English gentleman, who would come to their door, and then he'd have his daughter, me. They would just find themselves talking to us. It was very rare that we would get a, no, I'm not interested, or please get off my porch. That didn't happen very often. We don't believe in heaven. We don't believe in hell. We just believe that there will be Armageddon. The earth will be restored to what it was supposed to be, like Adam and Eve times. And the people that have passed away, people that are true believers, they will be resurrected and will all kind of live in this like re-inhabited earth. There's all this talk about the 144,000. Those are a select number of people that go to heaven. I'll be completely honest, I've never entirely understood the concept of the 144,000. My dad has gone over it with me so many times, but I have so many questions that it doesn't seem to add up or make sense to me. So the earth is going to be restored, everyone that was a believer will come back, and everyone's supposed to live happily ever after. Conversion is really important because with Jehovah's Witnesses, you're not baptized as a baby. You're baptized when you feel that you're ready. So I was never baptized because I began questioning the religion when I was about 11 years old. And I just knew there was something in it that just didn't feel right to me. In the Jehovah's Witness faith, if you have a sin, you are supposed to talk to the elder body, which are certain people in the congregation that are overseers. You would confess your sin, and then they decide basically what happens. In some situations, if you've done something like you've been having sex for a period of time and you didn't come forward and you finally do, then you could be disfellowshipped, which basically means that you have to come to church. No one is allowed to talk to you. You come because that's your penance. That's you coming to make the effort that you want to be reinstated out of being disfellowshipped. But being disfellowshipped, all of your privileges are taken away. So any type of like conversations you have with people, field service, participating in the meetings, giving talks, you can't do any of that. So it's kind of like a public shunning in a way, which it sounds really bad. I know and appreciate and respect why they do it. But it can be really damaging for people because they announce it to the congregation. They don't say why, but they will make the announcement that this person has been disfellowshipped. It's happened to so many of my friends that it's horrible when it happens. Some people really just want to come back. They really want to repent. So they are reinstated within a couple of months. Some people it takes years, and some people are never reinstated. I grew up in Orange County, California, and we lived in a really, really suburban neighborhood. It was really friendly, and I loved all of our neighbors, but we never saw any kids. We were homeschooled. My parents did not want us being influenced by the world, being a part of public school. So being Jehovah's Witness and being homeschooled, we were really isolated from a lot of things because you're not allowed to hang out with people that are non-Jehovah's Witnesses. You would go and attend a ballet class, and you'd buddy up with someone and make a friend, but you couldn't actually hang out with that person outside of the class. I didn't even know what was normal. Like, what was normal to me was what I saw on television. I always had a really good relationship with my dad. Like, I had a really, really strong bond with him. My mom, my sister can remember all these good memories of my mom taking us to, like, the beach and, like, museums down to LA, but I don't remember any of that. My sister's 2 years older than I am, so she remembers my mom when she was healthy, and I remember my mom as always being sick. And my dad, he worked so much during the week, and because he was a elder and then also what's called a presiding overseer, a lot of his weekends would be dedicated to going over his talks and, you know, writing new talks and preparing new materials. So that took up a lot of his time. I want to say that my mom started getting sick maybe when I was around 4. We had a trip to go back to England to visit my dad's family. We went to England, we went to Paris. It was a great trip, but my mom got really sick when we were out there. And I remember coming back on the flight home, and it was like a giant, one of those giant like international planes that has the 3 sets of rows, a couple seats on the side, and then a large section in the middle. And I remember the stewardess clearing out an entire section in the middle, moving everyone there to first class, and then my mom just like lying down and taking up all the seats because she was sick. And then from there on out, it was always something. It was bronchitis, then it was fibromyalgia, then it was what was another one? Irritable bowel syndrome. There were so many different things, migraines. They were all physical ailments, and we would just spend so much time at doctor's offices. And if they couldn't figure out what the problem was, then they were incompetent and she had to find another doctor who could help her. Doctors back then, I don't know if things have really changed now, but they would just toss medication after medication after medication at my mom. I remember she had this duffel bag in her closet that was just filled with prescription bottles of all these different things. Somewhere around that time, we were right by the college by our house. We're making a left turn. We were in my mom's old BMW. And she said, "I have something to tell you, and I don't want you to be scared, but it's not a good thing. Something happened to me when I was little. I was molested by someone that I knew. And sometimes when bad things happen to you, you can try to forget about them." And I forgot about them for a really long time. And I've been talking to this doctor, and he's helped me work through some of these memories, and I wanted to let you guys know because I would like to ask if anything has happened to you. Have you been touched? Have you ever been around family members that make you feel strange? I mean, my family from my dad's side is all in England, so it has to be her side. So all I keep thinking is, which of these 7 people that we see on a regular basis is it? Which is kind of terrifying as a kid. I want to say I was about 6 or 7, and then my sister would have been about 8 or 9. Well, wait a minute, like Grandpa and I go and we hang out upstairs in the loft and we look at all these books and like we like take naps together, and that's something that's normal. Like, I know a lot of kids that do that with their grandparents. Almost just like taints and like tarnishes that entire area of your life where you start doubting and thinking like, oh my gosh, like did something happen? Was there something weird? And I don't really know how to describe it or articulate it properly, but it definitely left me feeling uncomfortable as a kid, and it still makes me feel uncomfortable as an adult. I personally don't feel like anything has ever happened to me, but I have that terror of, oh my gosh, I'm almost 31. What if one day I wake up and I remember something? I really hope something down the line doesn't all of a sudden come out and completely shatter everything that I had. I feel like the relationship that I have with my mom is unlike anybody else's relationship that they have with their moms, and that I feel like this strange disconnect between the two of us, and it's kind of always been that way. I don't really know how to describe it. She's almost been like a very distant mother figure. I mean, she'd always been depressed. A lot of the times growing up, she would just lock herself in her room for literally days. And when you're homeschooled and your mom is supposed to be the person that's teaching you things or giving you a curriculum or, you know, making you do your homework and all those things that kids don't want to do, we had so much freedom because she wasn't there. Like, she wasn't mentally she wasn't there, and physically she wasn't there, because she would remove herself by placing herself in her room because she didn't want us to see it. She would just bounce between being crazy depressed or really, really, really hyper manic. I remember the days when she would be manic and she would just have all this energy, and it was great for me because I was thinking, oh my gosh, we're going to get to do things. We'd go on errands, we'd go shopping, and she would just spend so much money on herself and buy us gifts. I had no idea. I'm just thinking, oh, mom's just full of energy. She's feeling great. Like, this medicine must be working. This doctor must be working. And it wasn't. I started noticing marks on her arms. She would have, my mom bruises really easily too. So she would have these like, kind of like black and blue bruises up and down her arms. And then she would have all these scratches. And I remember thinking, oh, maybe it's the cat. Maybe the cat scratched her. But my sister at one point pointed out, you know, mom's cutting. When she would go into her room and lock herself in there for hours, she would come out. My sister and I would be in the living room and we'd hear her open up the kitchen drawer, and then we'd hear her take out a knife. And then she'd go back into her room and lock the door. I remember the one time I was in my dad's office with my sister. Maybe I was like 12 or 13. Anyway, we were in the office and my mom came in, and I remember she was wearing like a white nightgown. I thought, here we go, it's gonna be another argument. I don't know what we've done, we're being quiet. And I noticed when she stormed into the room that she had blood on her chest. I just remember feeling so sick and frozen, and she was crying. She's completely irate, just crying. And she's like, this is where I tried to cut out my heart. And she opened her nightgown, or pulled her nightgown down, and showed us this big red gash in her chest. I couldn't talk. Like, nothing could have come out of my mouth. I was just so terrified. And I remember my sister being like, what do you want us to do with that, mom? Like, what are you trying to do with coming in here and telling us something like that? Like, how are we supposed to handle this? And it just started like another crazy argument, and I remember not being able to speak. Like, nothing could come out. Somehow that argument resulted in my mom going back into her room, slamming the door, and me thinking, like, what else is she doing in there? Like, what else is she cutting up? If she already tried to cut out her heart, like, is she gonna try and kill herself? There was so much of me that thought, just assumed, that my dad must have known what was going on, but we never talked about it. He'd come home and the house would be a mess. Because I already felt like such a weight of disappointment, like when my dad came home, that I didn't want to talk about any of those things. I remember he'd walk up the hall, he would put his hand on the door to open the door, the knob, and it would be locked. And he'd be like, call out her name and just say, hey, I'm home, can you let me in? And sometimes she'd let him in, and sometimes she wouldn't. Sometimes he would just come out into the living room and just end up hanging out with my sister and I while he prepared like ministry documents and, you know, got prepared for that night's meeting or whatever else was on the table or the agenda. And then some days she would let him in and he would go in there and the door would get locked. And then we'd see my dad like the following morning when he left for work around 6 or 7 a.m. I don't look back and think of my parents as being in love. As I sit here in front of me on my picture frame is a bunch of photos of my parents like in the early stages of their relationship. And they look so happy. But I look at these faces and I don't see any of that. I don't remember any of that growing up at all. My mom pretty much wore the pants in their relationship because she held so much over his head. Like, it was just the sickness, and I think my dad always felt like he had to walk on eggshells with that. He tried to be comforting, but I think that there was always a lot of resentment because he also moved over here to be married to my mom, and he initially met this young, vivacious woman that I've only ever heard stories about. My sister and I have a strange relationship. Because we were so isolated from being able to hang out with other children or kids our age, we were each other's best friend. But because my sister was older than I was, I just always looked at her as having so much power. So at the end of the day, whatever she said went. She has the way of making you feel so completely small and worthless. It was normally something about my appearance that was normally like, well, you're really ugly, or it's really sad that you don't know how ugly you are. She would make these comments and it was like bullying, but she was my best friend. So instead of just being like, oh, you know, fuck you, and walking away at like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, going into my teenage years, there was just this constant, and I would accept it because she was my older sister and she had all the power. We had one magazine subscription in the house, and it was to Shape magazine. And I would just look at these models in there and think, like, they're so athletic, they're so in shape. Like, if I looked like this, there's no way that my sister could ever tell me that I was ugly. So I would completely eliminate any type of, like, calorie intake that I had. Gosh, for months, I would be eating, so gross, I would eat a small can of canned corn, and I would just, like, eat that throughout the day. If we had dinner, I would make a full plate of food, but I would only ever eat, like, a small portion of the chicken, only a couple bites of rice. And my mom said, if you don't start eating, I'm going to take you to the hospital. And you know how they feed people? They force feed them with tubes. I was like, nope, I'm going to be eating my food from now on. I will eat my food. And then it was an HBO movie with Calista Flockhart when she was like a teenager, and she introduced me to what bulimia was. Most people would look at a show like that and they'd think, how awful. This is such an awful thing. This eating disorder destroyed this girl's life. I think she even maybe died in the end. But instead, I looked at that and thought, oh, there's another way for me to stay skinny. All I have to do is throw up my food and I can stay skinny. I would always make sure that if I ate 3 meals in the day, that I would be throwing up at least one or two of those. No one ever caught on with me. You know, it just, you'd go into the bathroom, turn on the water. No one knows. No one has any idea. It's been at least 10 years since I've made myself throw up, but it's just, I know that when I'm eating, it's still something that I think about. I always think about it. It's strange. I just haven't done it because I know it's really unhealthy and not a good thing, but it's always in the back of my head. My sister always processed things a little bit different than me. I would usually like internalize and not talk about it, and she would get really angry. I was always so terrified of being angry at my mom, especially to her face, and being reactive, because I thought, what if that's the thing that like pushes her over the edge? I don't even remember who was over at the house. My sister and I had a friend over, which was such a rare occurrence anyway for that to happen. We were in my living room. My mom had been, I mean, she was always sick, but that week she'd been in her room a lot. She called out to me from her room, which was up the stairs and down the hall. I went up the hall, and I remember kind of being a little exasperated, and I was like, what, Mom? Like, what do you need? She asked me if I could bring her a plastic bag and some duct tape. I went into the garage. I found the duct tape. I went into the kitchen. I found a plastic bag. Went in there. She put her hand out through the door, took it, and then I went back out into the living room, was hanging out with my friends. Some time passed, I don't know how long, and one of my mom's friends had come over, and she, I remember her friend saying, we're taking your mom to the hospital, she needs to go to the hospital, your dad's on his way home. I remember just not really understanding, like, what is going on? Someone, and I don't remember who, it could have been my dad, it could have been a doctor, it could have been one of her friends, told me that my mom had taken the plastic bag that I gave her, and she put it over her head, and she duct taped it, and she tried to kill herself. And I still now don't even know really how to process that. You had me bring you those things. Why didn't I realize that that's what she was asking? Like, why didn't I think? Sorry. I just remember feeling so guilty. And so angry also at the same time by thinking, like, how could you do this? How could you, like, I know we're not really close, but when your own mother decides that she doesn't care enough to try and get better so that she can try and be a good mother or just even be a mother for her kids. It's such a strange feeling of abandonment in a way that it's hard to describe, but you always feel like if your parent ever leaves you on earth, it's never going to be for
Like, it's never going to be by their own hand. Like, they would never intentionally want to do that because they love you. They want to be there. And to have a parent make that decision, they don't want a life for themselves, and they do not want a life with their family and their kids. It is such a devastating blow. As an adult, I still try and process it and rationalize it and try and be like, well, you know, when you're mentally ill, you're not thinking of those things. And I mean, to a 13-year-old kid, it's completely devastating. She was taken to the hospital, and they kept her there for 2 weeks. I remember those 2 weeks of her being gone just being the best 2 weeks that I had had in so long. And I know that sounds horrible, but it was so nice to be at home and to not have to worry about what was going on in that room. It was so nice to know that she was in a place where she had people taking care of her. And then I remember my dad saying, oh, she's being released. We're bringing her back home on Saturday. Oh, I just remember like the feeling of dread of, I do not want to have to go through this again. You know, I've got to put on this front of being really happy that mom's coming home, when the reality was I wasn't happy and I did not want her coming home at all. We, as a family, saw a therapist twice, and that was it. There was no, oh my gosh, like, we should put the kids into therapy individually, like, they need to have someone to talk to in order to mentally process this. Nothing. There was nothing. Two visits that we had with a therapist as a family were a disaster. The second session, my mom just refused to speak, and she started talking like a 5-year-old. And clung to a stuffed animal, and it was such a bizarre situation, and I just kept thinking, like, what is the doctor thinking right now? Like, what awesome advice are they going to give us? Because I don't even know where to start. And then we just never saw the therapist after that. When I think about that house, and I can still smell the same smells, I can still see how the room was set up, I can hear my mom, even in her room, walking around in there with the door closed. Like, I know her footsteps. Like, I remember all of those things and just feeling so tense and so on edge all the time. Like, never knowing when there's going to be an outburst. Never knowing when she's going to have another manic moment. When she tried to kill herself, my dad kind of lost a little bit too. He lost one of the biggest accounts that he had, that he was working with. He's in sales. And he lost one of the biggest accounts that he had. When I was 17, my dad said, we're filing for bankruptcy. We can't do this. And it was really sad because my dad made a really, really good salary. For him to have to file for bankruptcy, I know that was a huge thing, but he's like, it's the only way, I can't get out of this. We put our house up for sale, and I remember we put it up for sale on, say, like a Tuesday, and it sold on a Wednesday. It was absolutely bizarre. My grandparents, my mom's mom and dad, they said, you guys can move in here, and you know, you can use a garage for your storage, and you know, then you guys can start looking for something. So that's fine. My parents were fighting nonstop, and one day my dad just said, you know what, I'm going to pack up some things and I'm gonna stay in a hotel. And my mom took that as he left me. And she filed for divorce. And I can't say that I think it was a bad thing, because I don't think that my parents were ever happy, but you don't get divorced when you're Jehovah's Witness. They got divorced. My dad, unfortunately, had to step down from his positions within the faith because, you know, you can't hold that position and be divorced. So a lot of the things that brought him joy, a lot of the things that he really enjoyed doing, he no longer can do and participate in. And my mom, she is, I would say, a barely functioning person. I mean, she has a job, but I can almost see, like, the termination date, like, when it's going to end. It's one of those. And I don't know what she's going to do for herself when that happens. They divorced when I was 17, and keep in mind, I hadn't believed in the religion since I was 11. I mean, I had been going, I went through the motions, I always attended the church, I still went out in service on the weekends with my dad. But when I turned 18, that was it. I told my dad that I wasn't going to be going to church anymore. That was another blow to my dad, because I think that he really felt as though he had failed. He had failed as a parent, he had failed as a husband, and then he had also failed in keeping his kids in the faith. He just seemed like a really broken person, and I felt this responsibility to try and make it better, but because I knew it was impossible for me to make it better, I just wanted to keep distance between us. It's like he lost his entire identity. I'm 31 now. After all of this happened, after my parents got divorced, I moved out with a friend when I was 18. I started working. I remember that was like my first opportunity to really make friends that were not Jehovah's Witnesses. I was working at a bank and I was able to make friendships there. And that's kind of where my life, I want to say that's where my life started. Like, my life started when I was 18 and I thrived. So from 18 up until I was like in my early 20s, just having the opportunity and with like a new set of eyes, it was great. And now at 31, I'm married. I never thought that I would be married, but I'm married and I absolutely love my husband. He's great. He is a excellent communicator and he forces me to talk about things even when a lot of the times my natural inclination is to shut down or not say anything because it might upset someone else. Like, he's really good at drawing me out and trying to get me to talk about what's going on in my head in that moment. My sister and I still have, we still have our issues, but I don't blame her for anything that she did. You know, she was a kid, I was a kid, and I don't hold her responsible for what she did. It's still hard. There's still times when we're hanging out when I still feel like that sense of like she has power over me, but I realize she doesn't. I've told her how what she did in the past had affected me, and she didn't know. She had no idea that I had an eating disorder, and she feels horrible about that. But I thought it was good for her to know so we could kind of talk through it. And with my mom is 55. I love my mom. Like, I really, really just want her to be healthy. And I'm kind of getting to the point where I realize that she's never going to be the mom that I wanted her to be. I have forgiven her for what she did. And all I want for my mom is I want my mom to be happy. I know she's not. There are definitely days when I look back at what life was like growing up on that street in that house with my mom, with my sister, and I just, when I really think about it, I do have a lot of resentment towards my dad, because ultimately my dad was the healthy one. He was the one that should have been able to identify, this isn't healthy. My wife is sick. My kids are homeschooled. They're only around the sick person. Someone needs to step in. But if I find myself thinking back on the, like, the coulda, woulda, shouldas, I find myself getting really sad. And I try and say, you know what? Like, that's really, it's really unfortunate what happened. Like, everything that happened to all of us was unfortunate. I know my mom didn't want to be sick. I know my mom wanted to be a really good mom. Like, I know she did. My sister and I are kind of parallels in that she still holds so much anger and so much resentment in her that I see how it's affected her life. She's an angry person in general. I see how it's affected jobs. I see how it's affected relationships for her. But I feel like it's really held her back in a lot of ways. And for me, I feel like we went through the exact same situation, but I just never wanted to hold on to it. I don't know why. I really don't know why. I feel like it must be something in me that I can't control. It must be a part of my brain that's programmed a certain way that allows me that freedom. Because I also think that if she could control it and if she could turn a switch off, she would. I already had such a bad childhood and I already had such a bad early life that I want to make an active effort to have the best possible outcome for whatever time I have left on this earth. I get to define who I am now because I hold all the cards. I hold the power.